If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. That was the famous Allegri's Miserere Mei, and that is very appropriate for Holy Week with Good Friday approaching. Welcome to the Warrior Catholic Show. I am Chris Ricketts, your host, and if you want to be a part of the show, I'd love to hear from you. The number is 718-305-7176. That's one of my absolute favorite pieces of music. I am a very big fan of sacred music, Renaissance style, and I was actually fortunate enough recently to see the Tallis Scholars, a world-renowned group from England who specializes in Renaissance polyphony, and they were here in Virginia, so I was able to go listen to them perform that song, and it was absolutely breathtaking. It's so moving. It's that lamentation, "Have mercy on me, God, in your kindness, blot out my offense." I always like to hear that around this time. You know, it's Holy Week now, and we're going to be talking a lot about Jesus' crucifixion. And tonight I'm also going to be getting into the whole debate over same-sex marriage that has really been just, it's been swarming across the country. It's all over the place. So I really want to take a close look at that. But, you know, it's Holy Week, so we're leading up to Easter. Now, you know, it's kind of crazy because we've been hearing about, it's almost cliched now, the religious aspects of these holidays. The commercial industries have taken it over so much. I mean, we start seeing Christmas stuff in September, early September. You know, you start seeing the Santas are coming out and the shelves are starting to fill up with Christmas lights. And now, pretty much the day after Christmas, you start to see the egg-shaped candy trickle into the stores. So when it comes to actually contemplating the religious meaning of these holidays, folks, it's hard to do that just because we've been inundated with chocolate bunnies, Christmas lights that come so early. And but now the whole point of it, you know, we're leading up to the fulfillment of Christ's mission on earth was to die. He was born to die. I mean, kind of we all are, but his death was a very, I guess, special. It was a resounding death which opened the gates of heaven for all of us. And so, you know, let's put aside the chocolate bunnies. Let's put aside the egg-shaped candies and the jelly beans. And let's put us, you know, let's just take a minute now to contemplate Christ's death for us. I mean, the fact that God, you know, one of the persons of the Trinity, the Son, came down to be with the creation. We're just, you know, we're just that those things that God made. And God tells Jesus, hey, you're going to go live among them as one of them. That alone is absolutely mind-blowing. That the Creator becomes the created. And not only does he become the created, he gets put to death by his very own creation, us. I mean, that's something that you could take a long time just meditating on that simple fact, that Jesus lowered himself to raise us to the divine by becoming one of us. God reached out in an act of total self-giving, an act of total love, self-donation, and became human, took on a body. Jesus became human. And so we're leading up to the Passion now. Christ's sufferings and death, it was altogether humiliating. Let's take a journey here for a minute. Let's go back now to, and it's very hard for us to do that, at least for me, to think about that time period. It's so foreign to us. We have cars, we have electricity, we have Facebook, we have the internet, we have online talk shows, we have all these things. But to go back to that time, you know, that those communities, small towns, everyone knew everyone. The way news traveled was by getting together and telling the stories. Family was very, very important. You had your relatives, your cousins. Everyone got together to celebrate events. It was a huge deal. I mean, the Jews were under Roman occupation. They were a ruled people. They paid tribute to Caesar. And they didn't have many modern luxuries. You know, there were no luxuries as what we may understand. You wanted water? You had to truck your jar out to the well to get it. You didn't turn on a tap. I'm just trying to set the stage here. I mean, what does this have to do with the crucifixion? I'm just trying to, let's try to really think into that time period of when Christ walked the earth, of when, you know, he was in his ministry. Took him 30 years of just living among the people. Of, you know, the Bible just said, oh, and he lives with his parents for 30 years. It doesn't even mention much of that time period. He was just here at that point. We have a quick caller here. Hello, you're on the Warrior Catholic Show. Who's this?
Gabriel.
Hi, Gabriel. How are you?
I'm doing good.
Awesome. What do you want to say?
Well, here's what I wanted to say. It's sad and good when Jesus does die on the cross. It's sad because, well, Mary Magdalene and some other people were sad, but what was good about it is because he went into heaven and unlocked the gates of heaven so other people could go to heaven.
That's absolutely right. No, that's you're absolutely 100% right about that. Christ opened the gates of heaven so we all could get in. That was a huge sacrifice, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Yes. Well, Gabriel, thank you so much for calling. It was great to hear from you.
You're welcome.
All right. You have a great night. I'll see you later.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye. Bye. That was my son, everyone. He really wanted to call into the show. So that's great. He's been talking about it for a couple of weeks now. He's been wanting to come on the show. But anyway, we're painting this picture of when Jesus walked the earth. And, you know, he lived a very unremarkable life for 30 years. Then he starts his public ministry. He starts spreading this message, you know, talking, overturning a lot of, you know, long-held traditions and beliefs. He called a group of men, the apostles, 12 apostles, to follow him. Imagine that, getting singled out by the Son of God. I want you to follow me. What do you do? These men left their lives. They left their families. Although I'm sure they still took care of them in one way or another. Right? But they left everything to follow Christ. And they traveled around with him as he preached, as he healed the sick, as he gave hope to the poor. Jesus was scandalous. He hung out with the dregs of society, the prostitutes, the lepers, the tax collectors. Jeez, no one likes tax collectors these days either. But so there's Jesus for 3 years. He's been going around preaching this message of hope and telling people the kingdom of God is at hand. That's some powerful stuff. He did a lot. He did amazing things, performed miracles right in their midst. So he gets to Jerusalem knowing he's going to die. And he walks, he rides a donkey into the city, and people are waving their palm branches, laying them at his feet. Hosanna in the highest, praise be to God. He walks in almost as a king. And it was kind of funny. They read the Passion this past Sunday at church, and he said to the Pharisees, a couple of Pharisees rebuked Jesus. They said, "Rebuke your disciples. They shouldn't say those things." And Jesus said, "Surely, if I tell them to be quiet, the very stones will cry out." I almost wonder if he was being kind of funny there. Now, just for a quick second, I want to let you know that you shouldn't let the liberal media convince you that conservatives like us are in the minority. Americans that identify themselves as conservatives outnumber liberals by 2-1. If you respect American history and traditional American values, there's a place for you to call home on the internet. It's traditionalamericanmovement.com. Traditionalamericanmovement.com is the place where real conservatives can meet up, exchange ideas, and find out what's new in the conservative community. Join up, post your writings, swap ideas, and be a part of the conservative revolution. All on traditionalamericanmovement.com. I hope to see you there soon. So anyways, Jesus rides into Jerusalem as a hero. I mean, his reputation was all over the place by that point. But he knows he's there to die. And so Christ's passion essentially starts at the Last Supper, the place where he institutes the Eucharist. It's the first Mass. They're all gathered together in an upper room, and we've heard the story. He holds up the bread and says, "This is my body, which will be given up for you. Eat it, and do this in remembrance of me." You know, and this goes back to, you remember earlier, he went on a long tirade. He was talking to crowds, and he was saying, "Amen, I say to you, unless you eat the flesh of the Son of Man and drink his blood, you have no life within you." He said that over and over again. And then he gives us that the means to consume his body and drink his blood at the Last Supper. Through the bread and wine, he transforms it into the very spiritual food, the manna from heaven, his body and blood. That's the institution of the Eucharist, fulfilled in his passion and death. He does these things for us. And you notice too, when he said all that, when he was saying that, "Amen, I say to you, unless you eat my blood or eat my body and drink my blood, you have no life within you." It says the crowds left. They shook their heads and walked away. You notice Jesus didn't say, wait, come back. I was speaking metaphorically. Or hold on, I didn't really mean it. Instead, he turned to the apostles and said, "Well, are you going to leave too?" So he was quite emphatic with that. That was the institution of the Eucharist. Jesus also knew that Judas was going to betray him. So at the table, he says, "You know, whoever, the one who will betray me is sitting right here, guys. Whoever dips his bread in with mine will do it." And Judas went ahead. So they knew. So then after that, it's amazing. I got to take a quick break, but we're going to keep going with this. We're talking about Christ's passion, trying to get into it and see what it was really like. I got to take a break, but don't go away. More after this.
Are you tired of your hard-earned money going to support liberal and progressive enterprises? I know I am. That's why I shop at thethirdlantern.com. This conservative marketplace ensures that your money is well spent and supports conservative entrepreneurs dedicated to making their products here in America. Look, I'm a business owner. I know how hard it can be to get your product out there. Get on his vendors list and it will help your sales. I have had his barbecue sauce. It is amazing. Check out the website, thethirdlantern.com. That's the number 3, RD, lantern.com. Send your liberal friends there and tell them Hig and Resch sent you. thethirdlantern.com. Put your money where your ideology is.
My name is Tom Thornton.
And my name is Cindy Thornton. We've been married 38 years, we're retired, and this is how we live united.
We play golf and we travel, but we also decided we were going to give to and volunteer with United Way at our community free health clinic.
I do the nursing at the clinic.
I work the front office, checking in patients, greeting them, making them feel comfortable.
United Way is how we contribute, because we know our time and money are going to the right places, the places that need it most and implement it best.
Judging by the thank yous we get at the clinic, I'd say we're doing the right thing with our retirement, too.
We even get a few bless yous. It's incredible.
We're Tom and Cindy Thornton. We volunteer at our community free health clinic, so we don't just wear the shirt.
We live it.
Give. Advocate. Volunteer. Live United. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
A boy born in Joplin, Missouri, was fascinated by anything with wheels and a motor. The odds of him going on to fascinate millions with his talent? 1 in 260,000. The odds of this born racer having 157 career top 10 finishes in NASCAR? 1 in 125 billion. But every driver seeks the pinnacle of their achievements. The odds of him winning both the Daytona 500 and the Brickyard 400 in the same year? 1 in 195 million. The odds of a child being diagnosed with autism? 1 in 88. I'm NASCAR driver Jamie McMurray, and my niece has autism. Learn more at autismspeaks.org/signs. Early diagnosis can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Aren't you glad the so-called fairness doctrine doesn't apply here?
Howdy, folks. We're back. This is the Warrior Catholic Show on conservativenationradio.org. Please call in at 718-305-7176 if you want to be a part of the show. I'd love to hear from you. We're talking about Christ's passion, his sufferings, we're trying to really put ourselves there. I like to try to do this and really meditate on it because it's so powerful. So anyways, they just finished the Last Supper, and it was a very powerful scene. Christ washing their feet, he gave them the Eucharist, held the first Mass, and then they go out to the Garden of Gethsemane, where Christ tells them, stay awake and pray that you may not have to undergo the test. Oh, I also forgot to mention before when Peter, you know, Peter's a very passionate guy, you know, Simon Peter, he swore his loyalty to Christ. I will never, ever betray you. I will never, ever turn my back on you. And Jesus, I can imagine Jesus kind of smiling and looking at him and saying, Peter, before the cock crows twice, you will betray me three times. I mean, what would you say to that? You're passionately swearing your loyalty to someone. Of course you mean it. Of course you've been following this guy for a long time now. You gave up everything. And then he just calmly tells you, you're going to betray me three times. You're going to deny that you even knew me. That's got to be hard to take. That's got to be a little hard to swallow. So anyways, they get out to the Garden of Gethsemane, and Christ, you know, he's God. He's the Son of God. But he's in there praying fervently. The sweat ran as drops of blood from his brow. Seriously, I mean, he's human. He's nervous. He says, Father, if you can, let this cup pass from me, but not my will, just yours. I mean, that coming from Christ in itself, the fact that Jesus, the Son of God, fully knowing that he's going to die, he's there to sacrifice his life for humanity, is still nervous and very, I don't know about scared, but he's very, very, he's praying so hard. He even asked God, hey, dude, if there's a way we can get out of this, that's fine. But in the end, he submits to God's will. He knows the humiliation that he's about to endure. He knows what's going to happen. I mean, the apostles don't. He comes back and finds them all asleep. I wonder if he got a little ticked off at that point. Hey, I'm in agony here. They call it the agony in the garden. Christ is in agony. It's one of the mysteries of the sorrowful mysteries of the rosary. He's in agony. And he comes back and finds his followers, his chosen apostles, laying around asleep. I mean, I wonder if he kicked them or something. That would have been kind of funny. Dude, wake up! Why are you all sleeping? So he wakes them up and goes back away. I mean, this is just in a garden out there in the middle of the night. It's dark. There are no lights and street lights or anything. They use torches for light if they had them. You know, it's quiet. It's surreal. You know, I love the passion of the Christ. They portray it so beautifully. You know, they have a little bit of a supernatural, theatrical element in there, and we'll never really know if all that really happened. Well, I mean, it was just an embellishment, but it really captured that. I mean, Christ is here in his agony. He's in agony before even starting the passion or his imprisonment and death. He's already in agony. So imagine what it's like when all of a sudden the apostles who are all sleeping, this crowd of temple guards and people come up. The high priest's servant. The servants come up. Now, it's they just come up out of nowhere, led by Judas, who walks into the garden. And what kind of an insult is it? He walks up and kisses Jesus on the cheek. I mean, even Jesus goes, so you're going to betray your master with a kiss. It's got to be kind of one of those, really? Seriously, you're doing that kind of moments. He betrays Jesus with a kiss on the cheek. And so, I mean, pandemonium must have broken out. I mean, one of the apostles draws a sword and cuts off the priest's servant's ear. I mean, it must have been total pandemonium. And in the midst of all that, Jesus still reaches out and heals this dude's ear. Hey, I'm being taken away, but let me just do one more thing real quick. That's incredible. That's again, Christ is in his mission of healing, and he still does it up to the last minute. He heals this guy's ear. Imagine how that guy felt. He was coming out to grab this guy, to get him and bring him in, to be questioned, to turn him over to the Pharisees. He gets his ear chopped off in the process, and then Christ heals it. Here, have a new ear. That's something to think about. So there they are. They drag Jesus. Oh, and do you think they had due process rights? Do you think they cared about how prisoners were treated? No. They couldn't give a rip. Jesus was hauled in like a common criminal. He was beaten. He was abused. They didn't care about the conditions of prisoners. There wasn't some advocacy group to make sure that there was a fair trial. No, the Pharisees wanted Christ and they got him. They paid off Judas to haul him in. Now the Pharisees, they were the political ruling class of the Jews. They were the guys that called the shots. Yes, they were lorded over by the Romans, But within the Jewish society, it was the Pharisees who were the political ruling class, and they did not like Jesus. Jesus had called them out. Jesus humiliated the Pharisees publicly. He called them hypocrites. He exposed their hypocrisy. I mean, there's Jesus yelling in the middle of a temple, "You brood of vipers." That's some serious stuff. So they've got a bone to pick. So they find an easy way to get him, because Jesus claimed he was the Son of God. That's sacrilege. So they haul him in because they want to get rid of him. He's got this huge following that's taking away from their power. They're viewing him almost as a political opponent. If Jesus has all these followers that listen to him, where does that leave them, the Pharisees? It leaves them hard up. That's where it leaves it. So Jesus is dragged in the middle of the night to a kangaroo court at best. They bring in a bunch of witnesses who all come. It's a bunch of jabbering lunatics who come in contradicting each other, making stuff up. I mean, this isn't a trial. This is just it's just staged. Now, let's think about how the apostles must have felt at that time. Here they had left their lives behind, called out, singled out by Christ. "I want you to follow me." They invested everything in him. Now, all of a sudden, this guy that they followed, that they pledged their lives to, is being hauled away by the Pharisees to be put to death. How does that leave the apostles? Wow, did I make a mistake here? What's going on? I mean, they scattered and fled. And of course, Peter denied knowing Jesus. Can you imagine that? Everyone's going after Jesus. "Look, blasphemer. Look, it's his apostles. Let's get them too." And then there's Peter. "Look, he's one of them." No, I never knew him." Three times. Yeah, you were one of them. I saw you with them." No, man, seriously, I wasn't there." So Peter, in his first test, fails miserably. And then, of course, he realizes that because he was still kind of hanging around. And after the third time he denied him, it said in Luke that Jesus managed to catch his eye. And then Peter began to weep bitterly. So Jesus is there before that kangaroo court. They ask him, "Are you the Son of God?" And he says, "Yep, sure am." By the way, that's not an exact biblical quote. So the high priest rips his shirt in two. That must have been really dramatic. And so they want him dead. They heard it for themselves. Here's their excuse. They're going to kill him. Kill Christ. Kill Jesus. We want him out. But of course, they had to haul him before Pontius Pilate because the Jews weren't allowed to execute their own criminals. So they had to find a way to convince Pilate, who really just wanted to make sure that there wasn't any uprisings, or he just needed to make sure there was, keeping everything on an even keel throughout the land. So this kind of thing was probably a logistical thorn in Pilate's side. "Oh, geez, what are these people up to? Another crazy religious thing?" So anyway, there's Christ. He's been hauled in like a common criminal, beaten, spit on, ridiculed, all because they want to get rid of him. It was a political ploy on the Pharisees' part. It was a political ploy. So they have to bring Jesus before Pilate. So they bring him in, and it's crazy. It's funny when you read through this whole scene and in the different versions of the Passion, Pilate doesn't seem to want to be bothered. Here are these crazy religious fanatics bringing in another guy, and they all want to kill him. Pilate's like, he sees no guilt in Jesus. "This man has done no wrong. What am I supposed to do? I find him guilty or innocent." Pilate's like, he just wants to get him out of there. He doesn't want to deal with it. But there's also the possibility that if the crowd gets too incensed, he could have a serious issue on his hands. So he's got to walk a fine line here. While the Jews are ruled by the Romans, he doesn't want another uprising. He doesn't need that. I'm going to have to take another break here, but we're going to keep talking about this when we come back, taking a look at Christ's passion from I don't know, trying to really analyze it here. But anyways, conservativenationradio.org is proud to be associated with the most effective identity security and credit monitoring service there is, LifeLock. LifeLock is a lot more than just your standard credit monitoring service. LifeLock helps to protect your personal information using a combination of data surveillance techniques and outstanding member service 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. There's really nothing that comes close to LifeLock. To protect your identity with LifeLock, go to conservativenationradio.org and click on the LifeLock banner. That's conservativenationradio.org and click on the LifeLock banner.
Go, Caleb!
Come on, hit a homer, Jesse!
Let's go, guys!
Hey, did you guys know that kids who play sports earn more money when they grow up?
Of course. I knew that.
Hey, did you guys know that kids who read books have a bigger vocabulary?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Wow, jinx. Did you guys know that friendly children have more friends?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true, I knew that. Did you guys know that winter babies are better at music?
Everyone knows that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, pretty obvious.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
yeah.
Obvious. Oh, hey, guys, did you know that most people think they're using the right car seat for their kid, but they're not?
Huh, I didn't know that.
I'm pretty sure I knew that. I'm pretty sure you didn't.
Parents who really know it all know for sure that their child is in the right car seat at the right age and size. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat to make sure your child is protected. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Happy anniversary, honey.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Wait, is that a goat?
Goats are a great gift, but maybe not for her. Go to goatsfortheoldgoat.com to give a goat and end hunger in South Sudan. So, do you like it? Goatsfortheoldgoat.com.
Hey, liberals, why don't you try rooting for your own damn country for a change?
And we're back. This is the Warrior Catholic Show. I am Chris Ricketts, your host. The call-in number is 718-305-7176, and we're talking about Christ's Passion. I'm really trying to take a close look at it because, you know, Easter and the holidays are so cliched and commercialized now that it's almost easy to miss what we're actually celebrating. And I know it's hard for me after the day after Christmas when I start seeing Easter stuff. It's a little hard to take in. So anyways, we're at the point now, Christ is in front of Pilate. Pilate doesn't want to do anything with Jesus. He takes him in, talks to him. Jesus doesn't say a whole lot. He's asking him, "Are you a king?" And Jesus just says, something to the effect of, "If this were my kingdom, I would have already been rescued. The angels would have come to my aid." And he tells Pilate, "The only power granted you is that which is given from above." That's kind of an interesting thing to say to Pilate, but okay. So Pilate just, he has Jesus whipped. And again, I'll mention the Passion of the Christ. If you saw that Jesus getting whipped, that scene was pretty hard to bear. I remember I saw that in the theaters and I just kind of sat there stunned at that portrayal. But it does say that in the Bible, it does say that Christ was, beaten beyond recognition. He was unrecognizable. This guy, the Romans knew how to inflict pain, if they're just whipping someone. So, but still, after that's over, Pilate comes out saying, "Hey, this I find no cause in him." Pilate even sends Jesus over to King Herod, who is all excited, "I get to see Jesus. Maybe he'll perform a miracle for me." Like Jesus is some kind of lapdog. "Here, why don't you turn water into wine? Let's turn some lead into gold, shall we? We can do some little alchemy here or something." That's not really biblically accurate. I'm just kind of speculating a little bit there. But anyways, Jesus says nothing to Pilate. He doesn't say a word. So Pilate sends him back to Herod. Herod sends Jesus back to Pilate saying, "I'm not doing nothing with this guy. There's nothing wrong." But it's the Pharisees who wanted Christ dead. They wanted him gone. He was a political opponent. He had a lot of followers, and they did not want to be publicly humiliated. So they pushed, crucify him. The crowd's calling out, crucify him. This same crowd that just not even a week earlier were laying down palm branches in front of Jesus as he rode into the city on a donkey. Again, what were the apostles thinking? Now their leader, this man who called them, who invited them to give up their lives, is now standing before a crowd after having been beaten and whipped by the Romans, and the crowd is calling for his death. If I were one of the apostles, I would be having some serious second thoughts. Of course, John, the apostle John, was the one that managed to stick through it all. The others were scattered, hiding. So there's Jesus before the Jews. Crucify him! Crucify him! Imagine what it must feel like to be Jesus. I mean, he's still human. He's standing before a group of people who are viciously calling for his death. Imagine if that were you. You've just been humiliated, treated, mistreated, beaten, abused, and now you're hauled before a large crowd of people who are all saying, kill him. We want him dead. That's some serious stuff. I mean, Jesus, the poor guy. I mean, it's kind of, I almost feel silly saying that, but as a human, he must have still been having some, it must have been heartbreaking. To see these people doing that. They chose, there was that tradition that on the Passover, the Romans would release a prisoner. So they chose to release Barabbas. The Jews elected to release Barabbas, who was a murderer and an upstart. He was starting uprisings and causing trouble. I'm sure the Romans didn't like the idea of releasing Barabbas, but hey, they stuck with tradition. And so they release Barabbas, and then Pilate says, what am I going to do with Jesus? Crucify him. Crucify him. The crowd must have been getting more incensed and more frenzied at that point, yelling out, screaming for Jesus' death. Away with him. Crucify him. Crucifixion ain't a pretty death either. It's pretty horrible. You're hanging there on a cross by nails through your feet and hands. And it's not that that kills you. You basically suffocate to death slowly over the course of some hours. So Jesus, after having been beaten, has to haul this cross from seeing Pontius Pilate, I think in Jerusalem, all the way out to Golgotha, the place of the skulls. So there he is, trying to haul that cross. He probably has, you know, some Roman centurions following him, still spitting on him, beating him. He's walking through a large, you know, the streets are all packed with people. Some of them are mocking him. Others are weeping. He's going, his strength, he falls all over the place. He falls down three times, it talks about in the Bible. He falls all over. They have to help find someone else, Simon of Cyrene. Imagine that, this guy who's just a random dude who just kind of might have was, he was probably just checking out, seeing what was going on. And then a Roman guy says, hey, you're going to help carry the cross of this criminal. You're going to help carry this guy's cross. That's very symbolic too. Jesus carried our cross. But then he also told us, come pick up your cross and follow me. Cross is the symbol of redemption, but it's also the symbol of suffering, redemptive suffering. So Jesus is carrying that cross through the streets with people yelling, spitting, making fun of him, mocking him. That had to have been awful. I mean, that thing must have been heavy. And especially after having been whipped by the Romans beyond recognition, I'm sure it must have been quite a chore to haul that thing. So he's got Simon of Cyrene helping him. There's the famous Veronica wiping the face of Christ, left the impression of his face on that rag. What a touching moment. This woman comes up and with compassion and with, you know, probably deep sorrow, wipes this poor man's face. He's bloody, he's sweaty, he's tired, he's exhausted, and he's walking to his doom. She manages to get in there to wipe the face of Christ. You know, that's such a powerful scene. It's absolutely beautiful. So Christ, he's walking through the streets and stumbling all over the place. Roman centurions right at his heels, probably still beating him, still whipping him. You know, there's an interesting passage that really jumped out at me at Mass this weekend. It says, "And following him was a large crowd of the people and of women who were mourning and lamenting him. But Jesus, turning to them, said, 'Daughters of Jerusalem, stop weeping for me, but weep for yourselves and for your children. For behold, the days are coming when they will say, Blessed are the barren, and the wombs that never bore, and the breasts that never nursed. Then they will begin to say to the mountains, Fall on us, and to the hills, Cover us. For if they do these things when the tree is green, what will happen when it is dry?'" You know, I found that a very curious thing to say. As he's walking, he's marching to his death, hauling this large cross, and he says to the women, "Don't weep for me, but for yourselves." What an odd thing to say. Blessed, the day is coming when they will say, "Blessed are the barren and the breasts that have never nursed." See, in those days, bearing children was the ultimate blessing. Fertility was a gift. To be blessed with children was something that everyone celebrated. A man and woman got married and God would bless them with children, with sons and daughters. I just want to let you know that conservatives like things to be predictable, dependable, and reliable. And like the true anchors they are, Michael Smith and Bing Fisher still roll out Soldiers of Patriotism Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central. Hey, it wouldn't be conservativenationradio.org without Michael B. and Uncle Bing, would it? Don't miss our signature show, Soldiers of Patriotism, Sundays at 4 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Central on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. Anyway, so Jesus said to those women, don't weep for me, weep for yourselves. The days are coming when they will say, blessed are the barren. And that really jumped out at me because look at today. Look at how backwards it's become. And let me elaborate on that. Soldiers of Patriotism is not going to be airing this Sunday. It's Easter, so I mean they even want to take a break, although they will be back the week after this Sunday, so don't go anywhere. They will be around. Anyways, so look at our culture today that has totally are we now saying in today's society, blessed are the barren, where birth control and avoiding pregnancy are expected to be the norm, are celebrated? Blessed are the barren and the breasts that never nursed. We have a contraceptive culture. We abort our own children. I wonder if Jesus was that maybe prophesying a little bit about that. I wonder that's something that I mean I've seen that, but I've heard that mentioned before. I'm not going to take that's not my original thought. I've heard that before, but when I heard the gospel this past Sunday, that line really did jump out at me, and I was reminded of that. Now we live in our contraceptive culture where we kill our own unborn children. Blessed are the barren. That's kind of sad and kind of scary at the same time. Even in the midst of his passion, Christ still says something like that. Wow. What a sobering thought. What a deep prediction there. So anyways, he's coming up now to Golgotha, the place where he's going to die. And I got to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Christ's final moments on the cross. and just how powerful and how awesome that was. Don't go away.
Nurse, I need you to apply pressure to the head wound until I can get to it. I'm concerned she's lost too much blood.
Oh, no.
You in the corner, who are you? You're not supposed to be here.
She's my girlfriend, Doctor.
You need to wait out in the waiting room.
Please, Doctor, I want to stay with her.
Look, she's been badly injured. So if you want to do what's best for her, you need to let us do our work.
Please, Doctor, she has to be okay. I didn't mean to do this. I love her.
Wait a second. You were the driver?
Yes, but I didn't mean to. I swear, we went to dinner. I was just buzzed. I only had a few drinks.
Just buzzed? Why didn't you tell us that? In that case, your girlfriend is fine.
Hey, sweetie. I feel great. You want to get out of here?
I can't believe this. Really, Doctor? She's really okay?
What, are you kidding? No, not really. Nurse, get me a suture kit. Stat.
Buzzed driving. Maybe we should stop acting like it's no big deal. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, the Ad Council, and this station.
Are you struggling with your mortgage payments? Call 888-995-HOPE to talk one-on-one with a housing expert about your options. Or visit makinghomeaffordable.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
If you love America, you're among friends here.
And we're back, folks. This is Chris Ricketts, your host of the Warrior Catholic Show on conservativenationradio.org. The call-in number is 718-305-7176. We're talking about Christ's passion and death. I'm trying to really look into it and picture myself there. And, you know, it's quite powerful. It's unbelievable. There's this one scene in The Passion of the Christ, and it really, I don't think it mentions anything about it in the Bible, but I think it's absolutely, it chokes me up every time I see it. And I'm going to try to describe it to you without doing that. But that Christ had just fallen, and Mary Magdalene were trying to follow along, and they were trying to get closer to Jesus. And, you know, they're also with the Apostle John, and he finds a shortcut to get closer. And Mary sees Jesus fall, and it takes her back to this time when Jesus was just a little boy, and she saw him fall over. So she goes running out to get him. And so in the same vein, Mary goes running out to Christ as he's there with his cross covering him, and you know, she goes out to just touch him. And Jesus says to her in the movie, "See, Mother, I make all things new." That's incredible. Again, I don't think that's in, I don't remember that in any of the passion stories in the Gospels, but that scene was just, it's unbelievable. So there's Jesus. His mother and Mary Magdalene and Saint John are following him along. He gets up there, and again in the movie, you know, he finally he's done it. He's made it, and he lays down and he's there holding his cross. And I thought it was very powerful too when one of the criminals looks over at Christ and says, "You fool! Why are you embracing your cross?" There's Christ holding it. It's his pathway. It's his fate. It's what God asked him to do on this earth. And he's holding it. He's embracing it. Showing us to embrace our crosses too. Showing us that if he can do it, we can do it. And that through those crosses is redemption. Holding them and carrying them willingly. Christ didn't complain. He didn't call on chariots of angels to come protect him and ease him of this. No, he accepted it and kept going. So he gets nailed to the cross, and that's, you know, it's any movie, you know, Jesus of Nazareth, Passion of the Christ, any of them, the greatest story ever told. You see the crucifixion scene, it's hard to take when you see them hammering the nails in. You know, that's got to be painful. So there's Jesus hanging up on the cross. Above him is a sign that says, you know, here's Jesus, King of the Jews. At first, the Pharisees didn't even like that. They said, take that down. But, you know, pretty much Pilate said, you know, it's what I wrote, so deal with it. So Jesus is hanging on the cross now. Imagine that. There's Jesus, the Son of God, this man who healed the sick, gave sight to the blind, taught people a new way of life and love, is now hanging from a cross. That's the sword that pierced Mary's heart, as was predicted by Nicodemus at Jesus's birth. And he looked, remember when Nicodemus was holding the baby, and he said to Mary, and a sword too shall pierce your heart. Oh, poor Mary. Watching her son hanging on a cross. Just think about that for a minute. If you're a mother, what was that like to see that? And then there's John the Apostle, the only one that stuck with it. They're looking up, and Christ is looking down at them. But he's still not done being made fun of and being mocked, because one of the criminals looks over at Jesus and says, "Ha! If you're truly the Son of God, why don't you save yourself and us? Come down from the cross." And then the other thief says, "You know, you fool." He says to the other thief who didn't mock Jesus, says to the one who did, "You fool, we deserve this, but this man is truly innocent." And then he says to Jesus, "Lord, remember me when you get to your kingdom." And then this next line I absolutely love. Jesus says, "Amen, I say to you, today you will be with me in paradise." Oh my gosh. Wow. To have the Son of God look at you and say, "I'm going to heaven and you're coming with me." That's incredible. What a powerful statement. And then there's Jesus hanging on the cross still saying, "Lord, forgive them. They don't know what they're doing. They're ignorant, Lord." Still begging for us. Still pleading for us to God to have mercy on us, the ignorant sinners who put our own Lord to death. That's what he did. And he still got, you know, the Pharisees mocked him, "Come down from the cross. He saved others. Why can't he save himself?" Poor, the emotional state of Christ when he looks up and says, my God, why have you abandoned me?" Oh my gosh. Even the Son of God looks up and says, "My God, why have you abandoned me?" That says a whole lot about the humanity of Christ. He was a man, fully divine, fully human, being put to death by us, the creations. We are the result of God's creation, and we killed the human manifestation of our own God, the Son of God, Jesus. I mean, that's so powerful to think about. That's so incredible to just sit there and ponder for a second. God becomes a creation and then is killed by his own creations. And still Jesus cries out, says, "Father, forgive them, for they do not know what they do." That's What an example for us. I mean, it's so hard for us to even be, I mean, if someone blames something on us that we didn't do, I mean, we don't like that. Hey, leave me alone. Some of us, you know, it's hard not to lash out. But there's Christ taking on the sins of humanity, being blamed for it. He looked up and said, God, it's my fault. Take me for them. You know, it comes to my mind right now, you know, who am I to get my hackles up even if I get falsely blamed for something? If Christ was dying on a cross for my own sins, when he was the only truly innocent person, and then who am I to get my hackles up? Then when Jesus finally dies, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. He's still calling out, God, I give you my spirit. Take it. And so he dies. And then it talks about there was a storm. The veil of the temple was ripped in two. And even a Roman soldier said, truly this man was the Son of God. Poor Mary. Now her son's dead. They take the body, Jesus' body off the cross, and there he is laying on the ground. That poor mother. You know, Mary is a true mother. She's been through it all. I mean, granted, she's the only woman on earth to have actually been the mother of God. But, and another thing, that powerful moment from the cross, when Jesus looks down at Mary and says, woman, behold your son. And then he looks at John and says, behold your mother. And then the Bible, it says, and from then on, John took Mary into his home. Mary becomes our mother through that. She is the new Eve. Whereas Eve failed, Mary succeeded. And so she is all of our mother. The mother of Christ. And just as John took Mary into his home, we can now allow Mary to come into ours. Praying the rosary. Now, I'm not saying worship Mary. I'm not saying, you know, make an idol out of her. No, because she'll only point you back to Jesus if you try to do that. She gives all glory to her son, but she's still our spiritual mother, the perfect mother. Well, that's kind of that wraps up my bit on on Jesus' passion. And I can't say I prepared all of that before, but I thought a lot about it. I kind of mapped it out in my head, but some of that was just me thinking off the top of my head. And you know, it's moving stuff. It really is. It's unbelievable. It's powerful. And then Jesus, after being put to death, triumphs. He conquers death and comes back to life in the resurrection. And that's what we're celebrating on Easter. But first, we got to get to Good Friday and contemplate these things. Contemplate Christ's death for us. I mean, it becomes cliched. Yes, and Jesus died, rose from the dead, and came back to life. Yippee-doo-dah-yee. Woohoo! I mean, it gets cliched, but to really analyze it and think about it, it's really, when you put it all out there and try to just imagine it, I think it's quite a powerful, moving experience. In a second, I'm going to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want to get into this whole same-sex marriage debate that's been going across the country. I really want to break it down and get into it. So when we come back, we're going to be getting into all that. So don't go away. More after this.
If you love America, you're among friends here. ConservativeNationRadio.org.
And we're back, folks. This is Chris Ricketts, your host of the Warrior Catholic Show on ConservativeNationRadio.org. That was Tomas Luis de Victoria's Populi Meus. It is a kind of a, it goes back and forth, my more Good Friday music. My people, what have I done to you? How have I offended you? Answer me. I led you out of Egypt from slavery to freedom, but you led your Savior to the cross. Holy is God, holy is God. Holy and strong, holy and strong. Holy immortal one, have mercy on us. Holy immortal one, have mercy on us. It's beautiful music. Victoria was an amazing composer. And again, I really enjoy listening. That's my favorite style of music. But anyways, if you want to be a part of the program, please call in at 718-305-7176. So, the Supreme Court is now debating the Defense of Marriage Act. They've been talking about Proposition 8. Because I'm not a lawyer or an expert in any legal expert, I'm not going to get into those specific acts, but I want to talk more about the issue of same-sex marriage itself, because it's all over the place. You see these little – everyone's changing their Facebook profile, you know, in either support or against same-sex marriage. And I see a lot of, you know, of course, everyone's got their slogans ready. They've got their, you know, there's been protesters and counter-protesters outside the Supreme Court. And, you know, it's really, I've kind of stayed back from it, at least on the, in the online arena on Facebook and whatnot. I've just been kind of seeing what's going on. So, but I really want to take a close look at this issue. And if you bear with me, there are a lot of elements to unpack and a lot of things we need to establish almost before we can even really talk about two men or two women getting legally married. You know, in the debates, I see a lot of people who, you know, say one thing or another about their support or whatnot, but I it's really revealed to me how a lot of people misunderstand freedom, religious beliefs, and basically the role of the government in some cases. You know, for example, someone on Facebook posted, "In my opinion, we should not use our religious views to decide how marriage should be considered legal in this country. While I may have my own point of view, our country was founded on the belief of equal treatment for all religious beliefs so that all could be free from hate, persecution. To be frank, Americans are using religion to discriminate, which is unconstitutionally absurd. We should should not use our religious beliefs in the equation of marriage at all on a constitutional level. That is only personal and unique to oneself. This is not the land of equal rights for just straight people, but for all. Who are we to judge? We are the example of for the world. That's just that makes no sense to me at all. It really displays it. It's really circular. First of all, before we get into it, I just wanted to use that to illustrate, one example of the misunderstandings of freedom, of marriage, of the government's role in marriage, and of religious beliefs. But before we get to that, what I want to say is this is a debate, at least in my mind right now, what I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the validation thereof or not of homosexuals themselves, those with same-sex attraction, or SSA, as I will call it. Now, the Catholic Church does not condemn people who have same-sex attraction. Merely experiencing that or having that those tendencies is not condemned by the Church. What is condemned by the Church is homosexual activity. And that's what we're talking about here in the proposition that two men or two women can get married. We're not talking about, by me saying I disagree with homosexual marriage, I am not saying I hate those who are attracted to the same sex. I am not saying that at all. What I'm saying is I disagree with the notion that two people of the same sex can either legally or spiritually form a marital union. Again, I do not hate gay people. And I want to draw this distinction because in the debate it has been blurred. Anyone who opposes, it's been screamed out by proponents of same-sex marriage that anyone who disagrees with them are automatically hateful bigots, and it's just bully tactics at this point. You know, it's not arguing a point; it's getting angry and throwing a tantrum. So I wanted to clearly draw that distinction. I'm talking about the concept of marriage between people of the same gender. So now that I've cleared that up, we need to talk about another term, marriage. What is marriage and why is it important, both in a society and spiritually? Now, I've seen a whole lot of good stuff coming out about marriage, but in most cases, people really aren't very clear on defining what marriage is all about in the first place, or what it is. If you ask those who support homosexual marriage, well, what is marriage? You'll be hard pushed to find a real solid definition. Oh, it's just something when two people love each other, it's just a celebration of love, or when two people commit to each other and out of love and this, that, and the other thing. So that's why I think when we're having this debate, it's almost impossible to get a point across because both sides are arguing on two different planes. It's like they're speaking, but each point is going around the other one and not really addressing it because we don't understand each other's terms. Okay, so marriage. Marriage is heterosexual marriage hasn't been the greatest either, but I want to point out that marriage is a spiritual union. It is a sacrament in the Catholic Church, and the joining of a man and a woman has been recognized by virtually every society from, the beginning of time. The essence that a man and a woman come together in some way or another, that has been something recognized throughout humanity. a man and a woman. So what is marriage? In the marriage, we have this notion today, and I think it's prevalent throughout, you know, some more secular heterosexual marriages, as well as in the proponents of homosexual marriage, that it's all about self-fulfillment. Well, if these two people love each other, we should allow them to just go in there and, you know, do what they want. It's not hurting anybody. But marriage isn't about self-fulfillment. Marriage is about self-donation. There's a difference. When I get married, I'm deciding that this woman, you know, I've been married for almost 10 years now. I've got 4 kids. And, you know, look, it ain't perfect. I will not claim to be a perfect husband or even a great one or a good, you know, I do my best. You know, everybody does. But in the church, when two people come together, they are declaring themselves before God to be one. You know, conservatism is all about the individual, and that's fine. But really, society is built on the family. The family is the nucleus of any society. So when you have this man and woman who come together, it is actually a symbol of the Holy Trinity itself. It is how God designed us, the universal longing to become one with another person. Now, in the Holy Trinity, you have God the Father and God the Son. And their love for each other is so strong, it creates a third person, the Holy Spirit. Such as when a man and woman dedicate themselves to each other, self-donate to each other, and become one. That love becomes a third person. So in that sense, marriage on the spiritual level is a symbol of the love of the Holy Trinity. That's what God put into us. Now, we all have a deep, people aren't meant to be isolated. We are meant to be in communion with other people. So in either through friendships, through relationships, but we are called to be with other people. And we have a deep universal longing to experience that communion with someone. Now, when a man and woman come into marriage together, it says biblically, and the two, for that reason, a man leaves his mother and clings to his wife, and the two become one flesh in the marital embrace. That's more than just, you know, plain old hookup sex. This is something so much more. The two become one flesh in that mutual self-donation. They're not in it for them. It's I give you all of me. One, the two give themselves to each other, where they become one spiritually and physically. We have the deep universal longing. We are programmed physically to desire, and I mean, men are programmed visually to recognize the beauty of woman. And God designed it that way. Women are designed to yearn for to look at men and yearn for that man who will come into her life and become a spiritual and physical partner with her. This is what we're talking about. Now that longing, that universal longing, it's a longing that also is sexual, because God gave us sexuality. He gave us those desires, and he called them good, because when he made creation, he said it was all very good, and that's also including our sexuality. Men are designed to physically respond to the beauty of a woman, as women are designed to physically respond to a man. Now, sometimes in throughout humanity, we have people who, for some reason or another, and I'm not going to get into the causes of homosexuality because I'm not a psychologist, although I do know there are a lot of psychological reasons that go into it, but some people, for some reason or another, have a sexual attraction to a member of the same sex. I got to take a quick break. Don't go away.
We first opened about 10 years ago. We were small, just a few of us. But it was exciting. I always dreamt of having my own business. It was kind of slow at first, but things started picking up. We had big plans. But in our wildest dreams, we never, never thought we'd have this much work. Yeah, with so many businesses caught off guard by the storm, Reed Waste Management has never been busier.
What will become of your business after a disaster? Nearly two-thirds of businesses aren't prepared for an emergency, and 40% of businesses that experience a disaster never recover. Make an emergency plan now, before it's too late. For a free online tool that helps you develop an emergency plan to keep your business up and running should disaster strike, visit ready.gov/business. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, the American Red Cross, and the Ad Council.
Hi, I'm Vince Gill for RAD, recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Real life's not a song. In less than it takes to play my latest hit, someone will be killed or injured in an alcohol-related crash. So next time you're out with someone who's been drinking, don't let them take the wheel. Take the keys instead. Sad stories make great songs, but happy endings make better lives. That's why friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Internet's official rhino hunting safari.
And we're back. This is the Warrior Catholic Show. I am Chris Ricketts, your host. The call-in number is 718-305-7176. We're talking about the debate over same-sex marriage, and I'm trying to really dive into it a little bit here on the spiritual level. We're talking about sexuality. Now, our sexuality is really part of, in Pope John Paul II's Theology of the Body, he talks about it as the innermost core of our being. So sexual distortions are things that when our sexual desires and arousals become disordered and become a means to an, they become the end themselves. Sexual distortions, like, you know, things that take away from the self-donation of sex and turn it into only the means in itself. I'm talking about things like pornography, which totally distorts man's idea of beauty and what true sexual union really is. I'm talking about when the hookup culture is sexual distortion at its finest. You know, you meet someone and 2 hours later you're having sex and then you leave and you might not even talk to each other again. That is absolutely distorted, even in the heterosexual side. Now, the church teaches that all of that is a mortal sin, as well as homosexual activity. The place for sexual activity is in that committed marital bond where a man and woman have taken that spiritual, they become spiritually united through the sacrament of marriage first and consummate that marriage physically. So when people end up with same-sex attraction, look, I'm not going to deny that it's got to be very lonely. I can't imagine, because it hasn't been one of my crosses. But, you know, the church calls everyone to chastity, married and single alike. And there are, you know, priests and nuns who give up sexual relations with another person. They give up their ability to get married because they marry. Priests become married to the church, the bride of Christ. Nuns take Christ as their spouse. It's beautiful, but there's also that deep bond, that communion there, even with people who are celibate physically, are still in a communion. And so those with same-sex attraction can still experience that communion in the church. Now, again, I can't begin to, and I've read on different sites and from people who say, look, I'm a Catholic, I'm gay, and it's very hard because I can't experience a relationship with someone that I feel that I love. And I'm not going to deny that there are people out there who might have a strong emotional attachment to someone or be in love with someone. But again, when we talk about love, we have to define love in this whole debate as well. What is love? Love is defined as desiring the good of the other, of the beloved. Okay, well, we have to think about what the good of the other is. Notice there's nothing selfish about it. There's nothing, it's all about my strong emotions. Emotions are a wonderful part that help us to experience love better. But love is to desire the good of the other. Now, what is the good? All right, well, now we have to define what's the good. The good of that person is what is good for them physically, spiritually, emotionally. Part of my job as a husband is to get my wife to heaven, is to be with her on that journey through this life and into the next. That is the ultimate good with a capital G, desiring that good. Now, God designed men and women, their bodies come together in one flesh. And that is the proper. I got a call here. Hold on a second. Hello, this is Chris. How are you?
Hey, Chris, it's Michael. I'm just listening in, bro.
Oh, okay. Awesome. Well, thanks for listening. You got any comments or anything? You just want to hang on?
Well, I don't know. I don't know what you've been talking about, man. You've been talking about yesterday and today?
Well, I've been talking about, we're talking about the whole same-sex marriage issue right now, and we're trying to define some terms first before we really get into the whole thing. So I think it's a complicated issue, and there's a lot to set up first.
Yeah, well, I'll just say real quickly, and then you just pardon me. I find it ironic. Justice Kennedy yesterday mentioned, said something to the effect of, you know, I wonder how those 40,000 kids in California that are the children of homosexuals, you know, what their voice should be.
Right.
I guess my question to Justice Kennedy, and it's a rhetorical question, would be, what about the voice of the 48 million that we've murdered since 1973?
Yeah, that's a very interesting perspective. Wow, I hadn't thought of that, but no, you're absolutely right. If we're going to give a voice to children, we better give a voice to all of them, or otherwise we're being hypocritical.
Absolutely. All right, brother. Well, have a good show. I just want to listen in.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate it. All right. Anyways, folks, again, if you got a comment, I know this is a hot topic, and even if you disagree with me, I still want to hear from you. 718-305-7176. So we were talking about defining marriage and coming up with a common understanding of certain things. Love, desiring the good of the other. Good is in capital G, desiring their spiritual, their physical, their emotional health. And spiritual is doing the things that lead us to heaven. If I'm doing something or engaging in activity or causing you to sin, then I'm not loving you. I'm not loving you. Now, for someone with same-sex attraction, I can't understand what it's like personally, but everybody has that deep longing to experience a communion. Now, sexuality is something that becomes so distorted in our culture and across the board, heterosexually, homosexually, everything. But we are all called to chastity, and we are called to live in a respect for each other. And if I'm loving you, that means I am engaging in activities and in a lifestyle that is good for you, for your soul, good for your body, everything. So in a marriage, that is what husband and wife do. They give of themselves to each other. Nothing selfish. I often think that I hear in these debates, it seems to come down to things about sex and, well, why should we live chastity? And it isn't about sex. Sex is a celebration of marriage, of what is already there. Even if sex can become distorted in a heterosexual marriage as well, because if it turns into something that is only about that, then it is not truly fulfilling God's design for sex. Everybody's called to chastity, and in the single life, that means that you are holding up with, you are giving up your you're holding off until you can achieve a union with someone in a marriage through the marital embrace, through total and complete self-giving and donation. Now, regarding those who have same-sex attraction, that can lead to a lonely life because we still have a biological side that desires a union. And our biological side can be quite distorted because there are plenty of heterosexual people out there that are addicted to pornography, that sleep around, that engage in the hookup culture, that degrade and demean and hold others as objects in their eyes. And that is just as wrong as anything else. It's just as wrong as it's in that same distortion as homosexual relations. I'm not saying, again, notice I'm saying the actual act, not someone who is attracted to the same gender. I believe that there needs to be a lot of compassion and understanding because I see a lot of Christians that get on their high horse and love to, it's our duty to remind these people of their sin and blah, blah, blah. Yeah, that's not very compassionate, I don't think. I don't think that's helping if you just sit there and quote Bible verses at somebody. I'd say a lot of us Christians here who are opposed to gay marriage should also be taking a look at ourselves and looking at what sexual sins that we might have as well, because just because someone is homosexual doesn't mean that they're, you know, all of a sudden evil and terrible, because we got our own issues too. I just want to keep a perspective about this because I think both sides can get pretty riled up here. So in that marriage between the man and the woman, that love, the love becomes so strong, just as in the Trinity, it creates another person. And that's God's gift. Okay, so why is marriage important? Why is it in the best interest of perhaps government to protect marriage? Now notice, government doesn't grant the right to marriage. Marriage already exists before government. It's in government's best interest to protect it because the family is the nucleus of society. And it's about the children. It's about children. Because when a man and woman come together in a marriage and participate in God's creation of having children, they're taking on the responsibility of laying down in those children the morals and values that are going to continue the society. When the family degrades, that family nucleus, that man, wife, children nucleus, and when that goes, everything else falls with it. Just look now. We have children who are raised in motherless, fatherless homes. We have, you know, children get tossed around. They've become a commodity. Custody battles, court hearings, divorce. Multiple children from multiple partners. That's a very self-serving expression of our sexuality. It doesn't jive with the total self-donation. The total, I am yours, take and I give you all of me. And as I said before, that the sexual union is the culmination of all that a man and woman share together in a marriage. It's not what the marriage is about. It's a celebration of marriage. And it's meant to be enjoyable. God made it good. God made it very good, and he said so. And in that context, it is. But society is very interested in protecting the family so that it can raise, so that men and women can raise up children who are going to be good citizens, who are going to live virtuous lives, and who are going to dedicate themselves to the society and to raising their own family. Now, if we expand and try to redefine marriage, then we are redefining society as we know it. You know, now we have people that contracept all throughout their lives, and then all of a sudden when they're 45, want a kid and have in vitro, so then they have all the, you know, 8 frozen embryos, and then one of them gets, you know, selected. Children have turned into a commodity, but children are our future and our greatest investment. I got to take a quick break, but we're going to keep going with this. I've found some great articles on the internet with some amazing discussions about this. So let's assume that if you're listening to conservativenationradio.org, you're a conservative. You love America and our Constitution just like we do. Since that's the case, you're going to want a supply depot to get everything from books to bumper stickers and patriotic t-shirts to flags. And your pipeline to that good stuff is right here at conservativenationradio.org. Just go to our website, conservativenationradio.org, and click on the Patriot Depot banner. That will take you to the world's best-known warehouse for all your conservative revolution needs. Wave your flag and proudly display your love for America and the conservative revolution starting right now. Just go to conservativenationradio.org and click on the Patriot Depot banner to join the conservative revolution. Real conservatism for real conservatives.
What does it take to be the leader in production systems technology? To be the one company that solves production problems at any plant, for any product, and with any technology? It takes a 30-year record of success. It takes total mastery of complex technologies with a history of delivering success every time, without fail. Only one company can claim that high ground in manufacturing line optimization, data automation, and systems integration, and that's Philadelphia Control Systems. In factories worldwide, Philadelphia Control Systems programs, software, and engineering solutions deliver optimal performance and output flow with a record that can't be matched. Any plant, any product, any technology. Philadelphia Control Systems, the leader in production automation since 1982. 800-335-9811. PCSforAutomation.com. That's PCS, the number 4, automation.com.
Dave, what are you doing?
Just sending a gift to Dave 2037.
Who?
Me in the future. I save a little money from every paycheck as a gift to Dave 2037. So he can spend it on things like anti-gravity boots or a hologram Doberman. Something cool like that. I think Dave 2037 deserves it. He worked hard. What are you getting Steve 2037?
I guess I was thinking Steve 2037 would just fend for himself.
Well, all right. But don't expect to be borrowing my anti-gravity boots.
You want to have money in your future? You got to start saving now. Putting some money from every paycheck into a savings account or contributing to your 401k can make a big difference later. Put away a few bucks, feel like $1 million. For free ideas and easy ways to save, go to feedthepig.org. That's
feedthepig.org. Hey, let's just hope Steve 2037 doesn't get his hands on a cold time machine, because he is going to come back here and knock some sense into you.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
If you're wondering where Rush goes to do his show prep, you found it.
And we're back, folks. I'm Chris Circus, your host on the Warrior Catholic Show, proud member of conservativenationradio.org. If you have a comment or a call or a question, whatever, please call at 718-305-7176. Look, whether or not you disagree, I don't care. If you agree, disagree, I still would love to hear from you. All comments are welcome, as long as we all keep it civil. So that's about it. So anyways, we're talking about marriage and this whole debate that's going on. And, you know, I've really noticed that there are a lot of, you know, differences in terms and everything. So I just wanted to lay out the terms a little bit, what love is. When they say, oh, well, two people love each other, you know, we have a very weak definition of love in our society right now. And most of the time it means, you know, having a strong emotional connection. And, you know, it feels warm and fuzzy when I'm with this person or whatever. You know, I know there's some that are deeper than that, and I'm not saying that's everybody. I'm just saying as a whole, that's what it seems like to me. Just a very self-serving definition of what love is. But love is so much more than that. It's about it's ultimately the gift of self. Even, you know, among friends, among children, among spouses, It's all love is total self-donation, and that is what Christ showed us through his passion and death. He laid down his life for us. That's the ultimate example of love. You know, I was at a conference one time, and he said, "You want to see love?" And he held up a crucifix. There it is. So, you know, we have this whole debate now on homosexual marriage. And, you know, I found on USA Today, there's a great kind of a Q&A with Archbishop Cordeleon of San Francisco. And he talks, he brilliantly explains some of these things. I'm just going to read some of these to you because it says these points much better than I could. So the question, what is the greatest threat posed by allowing gays and lesbians to marry? And the Archbishop says, the better question is, what is the great good in protecting the public understanding that to make a marriage, you need a husband and a wife? I can illustrate my point with a personal example. When I was Bishop of Oakland, I lived at a residence at the cathedral overlooking Lake Merritt. It's very beautiful. But across the lake, as the streets go from First Avenue to the city limits at 100th Avenue, those 100 blocks consist entirely of inner-city neighborhoods plagued by fatherlessness and all the suffering it produces. Youth violence, poverty, drugs, crime, gangs, school dropouts, and incredibly high murder rates. Walk those blocks and you can see with your own eyes a society that is careless about getting fathers and mothers together to raise their children in one loving family is causing enormous heartache. To legalize marriage between two people of the same sex would enshrine in the law the principle that mothers and fathers are interchangeable or irrelevant, and that marriage is essentially an institution about adults, not children. Marriage would mean nothing more than giving adults recognition and benefits in their most significant relationship. How can we do this to our children? You know, that's a very interesting point. A man and a woman, God designed to be to raise children. Now, is it perfect right now? By no means, because most of the time, in so many cases, we don't even have a man and woman committed to staying together in order to raise children. But in the ideal circumstances, it is a man and woman that is best able to raise a child. Now, are there single parents out there fighting and struggling and doing their best? Absolutely. And that's awesome that they're doing that. But when there are studies that show when you have two same-sex parents raising children, it does have psychological effects on the children, and it is not the best circumstance. The Archbishop said it turns marriage into something about the adults and just what they want to do. It turns into a self-fulfilling thing. I just want to do this because I want to do this. I mean, when you define marriage just as a couple people entering into a contract, a relationship, a legally recognized thing, it opens up the floodgates for anything. There are already people. I mean, look at abortion, for example. They made abortion legal in 1973. And, you know, for a little while, it's gradually expanded. You know, you can practically have abortion through almost any month of pregnancy. They had the partial birth abortion where a baby can be halfway born and still brutally murdered. There have been even groups, philosophic think tanks, that are now talking about the euthanizing, the killing of infants after they're born up to a certain age. So we make marriage legal in that sense. We are opening the floodgates. Why can't then three or more people get married? Well, what? They all love each other. And again, in that weak definition of love, why can't a mom marry her son? Why can't a man marry an 11-year-old girl? Why can't a man marry a 12-year-old boy? It leads to those questions because when we weaken this, when we don't draw the hard line, everything becomes possible. I mean, most of us hearing those circumstances are, you know, oh, well, no way. But when we don't define marriage and when we don't define the relationships of two people, at least in the contract sense, then it opens that possibility. And there are groups out there that are already talking about this, that want to normalize pedophilia. They are already out there. And I know a lot of us have already heard of NAMBLA, the North American Man-Boy Love Association. that advocate for homosexual relationships between teenage boys and older men. This is an example of the distortion of erotic desire run amok. God gave us erotic desire. It's good, but it becomes distorted. It becomes part, it's still where our sinful nature distorts it. That is why we need to cling to the redemptive and the spiritual side of what marriage is intended to be by God. Now, I know a lot of folks don't want to take the religious route, and that's, I can understand that. But from the societal standpoint, a man and woman in a marriage is something that a government is going to want to protect because it is the nucleus of the society. When good children are raised, you have good citizens who work hard, who pay their taxes, who burden the responsibilities that are laid on them, and strive and do well in that society. When you have marital and family breakdown, then we have all the problems described by the Archbishop. Fatherlessness produces youth violence, poverty, drugs, crime, gangs, school dropouts, and the list goes on and on and on. When we, and I think it's an excellent point, when we delegitimize the necessity of a father and mother, we leave it open to just about anything. And, you know, anybody can raise a kid. And we say that, oh, mothers and fathers are interchangeable and ultimately not necessary. And we do not want to do that. We do not want to say that. We don't want to allow our children to fall into that. But anyways, make sure that you join former U.S. Navy SEAL Carl Higbee on The Sound of Freedom with Hagen Resch, Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central. You've probably seen Carl on Fox and Friends. He's the well-known author of Battle on the Home Front and an outspoken critic of the Obama administration. And liberals can't stand him because he's right. That alone means he fits right in here. So listen to The Sound of Freedom with Carl Higbee and former Navy JAG attorney Guy Reschenthaler, Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central on conservativenationradio.org. Real conservatism for real conservatives. So anyways, this is the Warrior Catholic Show. I am Chris Ricketts, your host. We're talking about the same-sex marriage debate. Call-in number is 718-305-7176. This Q&A goes on with the Archbishop, and I'm going to go a little bit more. If the Supreme Court opens the floodgates to gay marriage in California or beyond, what will be the result? And Archbishop Cordeleon says, if the Supreme Court overturns Proposition 8, this will not go down in history as the Loving versus Virginia, but as the Roe v. Wade decision of our generation. No matter what the Supreme Court rules, this debate is not over. Marriage is too important, and the issues raised by treating same-gender unions as marriages are too fundamental to just go away. Just as Roe v. Wade did not end the conversation about abortion, so a ruling that tries to import same-sex marriage into our Constitution is not going to end the marriage debate, but intensify it. We will have a bitterly polarized country divided on the marriage issue for years, if not generations to come. And then why is this of such importance to children? Why has virtually every known civilization across time and history recognized the need to bring together men and women to make and raise the next generation together? Clearly something important is at stake, or human beings of such different cultures, histories, and religions would not come up with the basic idea of marriage as a male-female union over and over again. When we as a culture abandon that idea and ideal, children suffer, communities suffer, women suffer, and men are dehumanized by being told they aren't important to the project of family life. Modern social science evidence generally supports the idea that the ideal for a child is a married father and mother. The scientific study of children raised by two men or two women is in its infancy. Several recent studies are painting a less sanguine portrait that some professional organizations have yet acknowledged about whether two dads can make up for the absence of a mom or vice versa. Now, it goes on for a while, and I would definitely recommend checking the whole thing out. It's very, very poignant. And this view, redefining marriage, it also raises some interesting points for religious persecution. If the Supreme Court rules that it's okay, What about what's going to happen when churches who hold deep religious convictions to the contrary decide to keep voicing their opinions? Well, in Canada, it's practically illegal now for religious institutions to even speak out against homosexual marriage in any way, shape, or form. But I got to take a break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
So I'm a dog, and I just got adopted by this new human guy, and I'm starting to wonder how he got along without me. I mean, okay, something as simple as walking around the block. He's got this leash thing, and he puts me on one end and him on the other, and I'm just taking him around. I think he's afraid of getting lost. Without that leash and me guiding him along, I don't think he'd find his way back home. But it's kind of cute.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me. Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes, twice a day. I have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
80 million voters can pull the wrong lever, and it's still the wrong lever.
Hello, everybody. We are back. This is the Warrior Catholic Show on ConservativeNationRadio.org. I am Chris Ricketts, your host, and we got about 15 minutes left. We're talking about the same-sex marriage debate. If you have a comment or a question or something you want to say, please call at 718-305-7176. You know, we're talking about redefining the basic fabric of our society, the family. And this one article, Theosophical Ruminations, yeah, no, it's a little long. It's really good. He gives a review of a professor of jurisprudence at Princeton University of an article he wrote. He says there are two views of marriage, the conjugal view and the revisionist view. Marriage, in the conjugal view, marriage is the union of a man and a woman who make a permanent and exclusive commitment to each other of the type that is naturally, inherently fulfilled by bearing and rearing children together. The spouses seal or consummate and renew their union by conjugal acts, acts that constitute the behavioral part of the process of reproduction, thus uniting them as a reproductive unit. Marriage is valuable in itself, but its inherent orientation to the bearing and rearing of children contributes to its distinctive nature, including norms of monogamy and fidelity. This link to the welfare of children also helps explain why marriage is important to the common good and why the state should recognize and regulate it. In the revisionist view, marriage is the union of two people, whether of the same sex or opposite sexes, who commit to romantically loving and caring for each other and to sharing the burdens and benefits of domestic life. It is essentially a union of hearts and minds enhanced by whatever forms of sexual intimacy both partners find agreeable. The state should recognize and regulate marriage because it has an interest in stable romantic partnerships and in the concrete needs of spouses and any children they may choose to rear. Now, it's very interesting, and it goes on, but I really like those two views seem to really nail it on the head. You know, we open up marriage to anything, and then it just turns into a self-fulfilling thing where it becomes all about, you know, getting benefits. And you know what I don't understand too is with this marriage issue, they're looking to redefine marriage more than anything, at least a lot of the homosexual activists, because in most states, if I'm not incorrect, all the states have some form of civil union or another where two same-sex people can get together and receive benefits. You know, Elton John even has a quote about that. He says, "What is wrong with Proposition 8 is that they went for marriage. Marriage is going to put a lot of people off the word marriage. I don't want to be married. I'm very happy with a civil partnership. If gay people want to get married or get together, they should have a civil partnership," John says. "The word marriage, I think, puts a lot of people off. You get the same equal rights that we do when we have a civil partnership. Heterosexual people get married. We can have civil partnerships." I mean, That's from Elton John, and I find it interesting that he would say something like that. You know, it's I've also heard the argument, well, you know, heterosexual people have screwed up marriages, so, you know, why not let homosexual people do that as well? I find that kind of a weak argument in that it doesn't really explain or define what marriage is supposed to be. You know, yes, marriage has been grossly mishandled in a lot of cases, but then there are lots of wonderful, loving, committed people in a holy, sacramental marriage out there as well. But the secular view of marriage is grim when you take God out of it, and it, you know that's an issue. Marriage is a sacrament meant to be lived out day to day. It is trying. You don't feel warm and fuzzy towards your spouse all the time. You don't. Sometimes you don't even want to talk to them. Sometimes it just is a bear. But when you take the actions of love, it begets love. Unless you take the actions and do something and come out of yourself, that is where the feelings follow. That is what you can. One follows the other. Now, you know, God designed it very well. You know, when a couple is first married and they have that newlywed glow, it's a wonderful time, and it's God designed it just like that. They're becoming one. They're uniting. They're together. You know, and they're supposed to enjoy the marital act. You know, that's what it's all about, giving to each other. But in this sense that we're going to now define marriage as something where two men, two women, and whatever else is coming down the line can happen, we are rewriting the fabric of our society to the worse. And I'm not saying this to attack gay people, and I'm not saying this to dehumanize them or anything like that. I'm saying that those redefining marriage in that way is going to be a detriment to society. They say, what harm is it when two people love each other? Why can't they get together? It is a general harm done to society as a whole. Yeah, if two women get married in the church next door, yeah, I'm not going to experience any physical harm or whatever. It's not going to harm me when they talk about it in that sense. But when society degrades to a certain point, you know, we're in trouble. And through this debate on marriage, I think it's time to reclaim marriage for what it really is. Because in any time a secular version comes out, it usually goes by the wayside. And that's happened to regular heterosexual marriage as well. Divorce rates are through the roof. We have a lot of people that don't even want to get married anymore, but they live like they are, having children, living together, but not committing, not fully committing on a spiritual level. That is the sacrament of marriage. It covers body and soul. It is coming before God and saying, we will unite our souls and our bodies together to become one flesh, one spirit, one body, and we will do this until death do us part. That is marriage, and that is what it's supposed to be. I think at this point in the debate, let's recapture the debate from, oh, we're not debating whether or not homosexuals should get married. Because spiritually, on a sacramental level, it is impossible for homosexual people to marry each other. Whatever they do legally, it still is spiritually impossible. And I don't want to deny people that they might feel have a strong be in a relationship. I mean, I know that there are gay relationships out there that have lasted for a long time, but on the whole, they don't stick together as long as perhaps a heterosexual relationship, marriage, although, again, secular marriage in the heterosexual world is a disaster. Now it's time, I think, for the Catholic Church to speak up and speak out to reclaim what marriage truly is. The sacramental essence of it, what God's design for masculinity and femininity is, and their mutual complementarity between the two. You know, same-sex attraction, I can only imagine it's a heavy burden to bear, and we should reach out with compassion and encouragement instead of a tone of condemnation and, you know, revilement towards those who suffer with that, with same-sex attraction. I can't imagine the loneliness that some feel, especially when they know that maybe their family will denounce them or they'll get kicked out You know, that's terrible. That's awful. That's not Christian. I think that at this point, reclaiming marriage, not redefining it, is in order for the sake of our society. And also re-engaging, you know, look, there are people, everyday people with same-sex attraction who live their lives, but, you know, there's a whole other level. The homosexual activists have pushed this to the degree where it is. And it is through bully tactics, it is through fear-mongering, hate-mongering, and all the rest that this has been accomplished. You know, you can check out Mike Adams on townhall.com. He writes a lot of articles that detail some of the bullying and just absolute, you know, intolerance of gay activists that have been pushing this and shoving it down people's throats. Some of them don't even want acceptance. They want us to jump up and down ecstatically when they march in and announce that they're gay and what are we going to do about it. You know, I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about the everyday people that 16-year-old kid who is struggling with same-sex attraction. You know, we need to reach out to that person and reach out and say, "Hey, we love you. We support you. Now we're going to pray with you and be with you on our spiritual journey together, because we're all in this together. We're all trying to get to heaven. That's our ultimate destiny." And allowing distortions of a sexual nature, either through pornography, through rampant promiscuity, or homosexual activity, those are all sexual distortions that take us away from the true meaning of sex designed for a man and a woman. You know, this whole thing gets down to the essence of masculinity and femininity as a whole. Who are we as men and women? Where do we fit in? Where do we meet each other? And, you know, a lot of those answers are found, I think, in John Paul II's theology of the body, which really lays the groundwork of that our bodies are an image, are an icon of God the Father. Made in that image, we bear the likeness of God in our bodies. So I'm almost out of time, so I'm going to have to cut it off there. But, you know, let's hold back at least when we're discussing this and understand that, you know, both sides seem to be coming from two different definitions of marriage, of love, of everything else, of sex and what it's for. And I think now let us pray that whatever comes out of the Supreme Court, whatever happens, we can keep our society as a whole propped up. And pray that now we can reclaim marriage for what it's supposed to be. Marriage equals one man, one woman. A bumper sticker, a slogan isn't gonna do this. Sexual distortions reach out down into the very core of our being, and healing from them can take years, even a lifetime. So let's be real about this as we move forward. Firm, compassionate, reaching out, but not giving in, keeping the line drawn in the sand. It's been my pleasure to talk about all these things with you. If you missed the first hour, we talked about Christ's passion in great detail. So if you missed that, check it out in the archives. I really enjoyed talking about it. It was a spiritual experience for me too, just to discuss it. So I appreciate you tuning in. We're going to be talking about all the hot topics next week on the Warrior Catholic Show. Tune in tomorrow for the Sound of Freedom with Hagen Resch at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central. And until then, I wish you all a very happy Easter. And may the grace of Christ's resurrection pierce through our hearts and allow us to fervently move on as true warrior Catholics, carrying our crosses with a smile on our face, and lifted our heads high, looking up at heaven. God bless everyone. Thank you so much for listening.